You're on the journey home, and I'd like to introduce Fred Nathan, who's the executive director of Think New Mexico. You know, New Mexico's high school graduation rate ranks second from the bottom in the entire country. And this affects everything from our poverty rate to our crime rate. Now we look at how small schools can help stem the dropout crisis and save taxpayer dollars. Fred Nathan, welcome. Good to have you with us today.
Diego, thank you for having me.
You know, Think New Mexico has to be one of the most effective organizations in New Mexico because every year you focus on one topic and you basically research it, write a report, lobby in the legislature, and basically make change happen in New Mexico. So congratulations on your previous accomplishments, and this looks like a really good topic you've chosen this year.
Well, thank you, and we get a lot of help from people like you and many of the listeners, and we've got a terrific staff and board of directors.
The problem of New Mexico's dropout rate, of course, is obvious to anybody who lives here and pays attention. But I was unaware how important school size was in the whole process of keeping kids in school. The larger the schools, the higher the dropout rate. What happens? What's the process there that causes that?
Well, a lot of this can be traced to polling data of high school dropouts. And they've been asked, well, why is it that you drop out? And some of the reasons that pop out are addressed by smaller schools. For example, the number one reason, which won't be a shock to anybody, is that a lot of these students feel disconnected and alienated from their schools. In smaller schools, one of the reasons I think they have higher graduation rates is because there are many more opportunities to get involved in extracurricular activities, sports teams, drama, theater, music, those sorts of things, just because of simple arithmetic. If you go to a school, you know, there's only five starters, for example, on a basketball team. If you go to a school with 3,000, your chances are many times less of making the team than if you go to a school with, say, 900.
Mm-hmm. So what is the optimum size of a high school that would optimize, you know, the ability of kids to basically stay in and actually graduate?
The best research has been done by Valerie Lee, who's a researcher at the University of Michigan and who's basically devoted her whole professional career to studying that exact question. And it turns out that the ideal size is about 600 to 900 students. Interestingly, you get the best educational outcomes at that level, but it's also the most economically efficient in terms of educating students, keeping in mind taxpayer dollars.
Uh-huh. Now, that's interesting. You would think that with the economies of scale that the larger school could process more kids more economically. I mean, prisons are built to be big. So should schools, is sort of the thinking that goes behind that.
Well, that is the conventional wisdom. And like much of the conventional wisdom, it's wrong. Our schools actually have been patterned after factory economics, which is that each additional widget costs less to manufacture than the widget before. And in fact, economies of scale only work up into a point. There's a terrific study that was done of urban and rural school districts, suburban school districts from all over the country. And what they found was that, in fact, it is less expensive to educate each additional child up to about 300. Then there's a sweet spot from about 300 to 900 where it's the most efficient. And then at about 900, you incur what are called diseconomies of scale, where the expenses go up. The best example of that is security costs. These very large high schools require security. For example, APS, the Albuquerque Public Schools, spends about $5.1 million a year to police these big high schools. Smaller schools are self-policing. They're communities. Everybody knows each other, so there's not the need for that security. Other examples are as schools get larger, over, say, 900, you have more administrative costs. Just to herd all those faculty and students, you need an extra layer of administrators and assistant principals and so forth. And a third example of a diseconomy of scale is as you build these very, very large schools, you have to reach deeper into the community to collect enough students to fill up the school. Well, your school buses then have to go much, much greater distances than they otherwise would have to. And when gas was $4 a gallon, and I think it's going back, that turns out to be a terrific cost. So the interesting part, I think, of this report that's different, I think people have known for a long time that smaller schools get much better educational outcomes. But this is something that sort of counters the economic aspect of it, which is counter to the conventional wisdom. So we can do better by taxpayers and get better educational outcomes at the same time if we start to build our schools smaller.
Yet here in Santa Fe, as one example, we continuously hear about the crisis of small schools that face the threat of closure. To Suki, Alvord, Griffith Street School, I forget what the name of that
is. Acequia Madre, Atalaya.
Yeah, and it seems like the same battle is fought time after time, year after year, around the issue of small schools versus large schools. Has that trend begun to change yet in New Mexico with the success of some of the charter schools, which are, by definition, small?
Well, yes, exactly. Charter schools, I think one of the reasons they're so popular when you poll parents as to why they choose charter schools is because they're much smaller. I just met with Lisa Grover, who's the head of the Charter Schools Association. She tells me the average size of a charter school in New Mexico is about 191 students. But Diego, going back to your initial point about Santa Fe and this divisiveness we have over school size, you know, we think the solution is to have small schools everywhere in Santa Fe, so it's not just on the east side. But the answer is not to shut down the small schools, which tend to outperform, but to see how we could create smaller learning communities in the other parts of this community so that those children can benefit as well from small learning communities and small schools.
You know, I couldn't help notice a photograph of Columbine High School in Colorado, with a student population over 1,900. And one of the reasons cited for the mass killings that were perpetrated there by two very disturbed students was this sense of alienation and being lost and being just another cog in this great big machine. Alienation is something very important that tends to get swept under the rug because when you're dealing with such large numbers, it's kind of hard not to be alienated because of the actual structure and system you're dealing with.
You know, you're exactly right. And one thing we didn't talk about in the report that I wish we had, and you alluded to this earlier when you talked about prisons, but if you look at public housing, say, on the East Coast, it's the same thing. The conventional wisdom has always been to take these problems and warehouse them in one location. And unfortunately, we discovered we've done that with our public schools. In fact, we found a textbook that was used at the University of New Mexico, came out in 1942, where the dean of the College of Education complained that New Mexico suffers because we're a sparsely populated state, and really what we need to do is to copy mass production. And of course, factories don't really apply well to schools, and schools, you know, kids are different than widgets. They need much more personal attention to address that alienation. And you talked about the violence earlier. Columbine's a great example of this. The Department of Education after Columbine did a study where they looked at schools all across the country and categorized them by size, and then looked at their violent incidents per capita. And what they found is that the bigger schools have many more violent incidents per capita than do smaller schools. And then when you go back to the data of why kids drop out, one of the other things that pops out is the kids simply don't feel safe in these very large schools. And naturally, they're not going to want to stick around in an environment where they're concerned about their own personal safety.
What sort of reforms are you looking for this year, and do you have any particular bills or initiatives before the New Mexico legislature that you would like to see enacted?
We do. New Mexico is unusual. Many states fund school construction almost entirely from local property taxes. New Mexico more and more is using local property taxes, but also the state is chipping in an enormous amount. Last year it was about $190 million. And there's really no restrictions on that. And what our legislation is going to suggest is that maybe there ought to be at least one restriction, which is that if a district wants the state to contribute to the construction of new schools, that there ought to be school sizes based on what we know about the data and the research on the economics of these large schools, and also, more importantly, about the educational outcomes, and require districts to build these schools for smaller capacity.
We're talking with Fred Nathan from Think New Mexico. What about the reforms that need to take place and how we measure here in New Mexico graduation rates? I understand that there's been a problem, and we thought we were doing much better than we actually were because we were just measuring the number of high school seniors that entered their 12th year and how many who completed as a measure of graduation rates.
Yeah, now you're going to make me defend the No Child Left Behind. One of the good aspects, one of the few good aspects of No Child Left Behind, is that it does require greater accountability of districts. And for many years in New Mexico and other states, they would measure their dropout statistics, you're exactly right, based on entering 12th graders to graduating 12th graders as opposed to entering 9th graders. And of course, when you do it correctly, and the No Child Left Behind statute requires this, the numbers are really astonishingly bad and show us what kind of challenges we have in front of us. And I think it's good, frankly, to know the truth and to know what the real data is so that we can at least begin now to address it.
At least we end on a happy note. Tell us the real data.
Well, the real data is not encouraging, but it helps us to measure where we are. Today was a regular school day in New Mexico, so based on the data, about 77 kids across the state dropped out in a school day. That comes out to about one every 5 minutes. In a school year, that's about 14,000, the equivalent of the entire undergraduate population at UNM. And I think what that tells us as community members and people that are concerned about the public schools is that we need to start to think differently about how we're operating our schools and to now maybe take into account the data and what we know from students when they're polled about the deficiencies in these schools and how we can start to improve them.
And to weigh this against the national average, I led off with the shocking statement that New Mexico ranked second in the number of dropouts, that is, right, next to the bottom. What is the percentage of kids that enter the ninth grade, that begin high school in New Mexico, versus the number that actually graduate?
It's 54.1%. Nationally, it's about 70.6%. So that gives us a measure of where we need to get just to be average. But obviously, we hope to exceed that. One thing that's encouraging about the small schools is a study that was done in Cincinnati where they blew up four underperforming massive high schools and replaced them with a series of smaller schools. The prior schools had a graduation rate just like our state rate, about 50%. The schools that came in started graduating levels of about 70%, closer to the national average. And so that at least tells us a little bit about the potential of these smaller schools to increase our graduation rates. But I'd be the first to concede that in and of themselves, they're not the solution, but they make all these other reforms that we need to do, to make much, much easier. And they seem to be much more friendly to learning, which is truly the bottom line in education.
Well, personally, having grown up in a third world country, being the first American boy to go to school on a particular out island in the Bahamas, it was a one-room schoolroom, much like many of the people in New Mexico in the 40s and 50s experienced here in the one-room, you know, schoolhouse. And it was great. We had, you know, everybody from first to 12th grade all in one big room, and the older kids helped the younger kids, and it worked out great, and but that's not what we're advocating here exactly,
no.
But it's close. Fred Nathan, we're just about out of time, and I wanted to thank you for coming in today. What can people do real quick to help improve the schools in New Mexico?
Well, they can go to our Action Center at Think New Mexico's website, which is www.thinknewmexico.org.
Fred Nathan, thank you so much for joining us today here on The Journey Home.
Many thanks.
Tomorrow, we're going to look beyond New Year's resolutions to some revolutionary steps that can help you prevent cancer, control heart disease, and reverse the signs of aging with Dr. Stephen Pratt, MD. Then, musical guest Celia with a preview of Healing Songs and Stories. We'll also have a conversation with local crime novelist Michael McGarrity. That's tomorrow on The Journey Home. I'm Diego Mulligan. Take care and enjoy the journey.